position number 22356, rule 3.
Freddie Andrews, reel 3.
So, we've been treating characters of various kinds for weeks and weeks, and now Calne had been taken, and the Germans were retreating, and the next part of our exercise, if you'd like to call it an exercise, was fillets. Sorry. The next thing was fillets, which, as I remember it, a long straight road with the Germans pulling back from what they could from the beaches of Normandy generally, they not having much petrol to get back, and there were plenty of horses which were shackled up to the front of one or two 3-ton lorries plodding up this road to try and get back. And then I remember the some of our airplanes, I think they were Typhoons, rocket firing things, which went in at low level and almost horizontal and shot up these convoys. And so the next thing was us to do was to, after they'd finished, was to sort out what casualties they were left and get horses out of the shelves and that sort of thing. And we had a little bit of respite then for a few days. So the next major thing that we got involved was the assault crossing of the Seine. The assault crossing was at Vernon, quite a wide river there, but on the German side there were big ramparts, several hundred feet high, which you thought that the Germans could have held for ever and ever. But it was a job, our job to get across this. We had the Royal Engineers waiting to put a pontoon bridge across. And but on the morning of the attack, we had managed to get in both our guns, which had levelled up so they could fire horizontal, and there were tanks and that, wars, amphibious tanks, to get across. And on the morning, I opened up, and I and my stretcher bearer officer went across on a Bren carrier on a jeep to locate a house or something like that on the opposite side to act as a dressing station when the troops got across. The main attack was by the Worcesters, and they got so much help from the French resistance, which in fact held it for about a day and a half. But ultimately we got across, but the number of casualties the engineers suffered on building that bridge, the corps commander had to tell him to stop on several occasions because he was losing so many men. But ultimately we got across.
What was happening to you personally on that occasion?
We had a dressing station set up on, probably in a bungalow or something like that, on our side of the river. But it was the stretcher bearer officer and myself went across on a jeep to find a suitable house or whatever that we could set up when the Bailey Bridge was rigged up, and to treat those injured. So that was our job, and which we ultimately did. I'll never be able to find that place. I've been back there several times. Anyway, it was quite a party, that. The nice thing about it, going back to food again, there were a lot of lovely peach trees down there, which was a great treat. So having got that over, and the Germans were pulling back and retreating towards Brussels very fast, so much so that transport was a problem, and we, the field ambulance, had been at it all the time since we landed in Normandy, so they thought it was a good idea for us to pull out so they could have our 3-ton lorries to supply ammo and food and whatever, while we got our equipment filled up, sorted out and cleaned medically and otherwise. So we were in this big field, and then it was decided that there was going to be a battalion parade, brigadier coming down, and that's only to review us and say, thanks so much for what you've done, blokes, you know. So, we were over camouflaged in by the hedge, and I was sorting out my bits and pieces medically and that sort of thing, and the cooks were sorting theirs out. And by this time, I was still in battle dress, and of course, and by this time, I was wearing a pair of Canadian half boots instead of boots and gaiters, which came off a body, actually. But,
what's a half boot?
Halfway up the, higher than an ordinary boot, comes halfway up your chin. And I just had them for comfort and that sort of thing. But I said to my pal Ron, who's Staff Sergeant, I don't want to go on this parade. I'll carry on with what I'm doing, okay. And then across the field we saw come in the Colonel Carr, who was a little bloke, a bit bandy. We used to call him Ben Gunn. And he came up and said, where's Andrews? He said, threw him up one. And he said, you've been awarded a military medal. What for? And he said, well, that job you did down in Normandy. So it's all cleaned up. So I rubbed some motor oil over my boots and fell in with the rest of them. And as they were all paraded, because one, just us two, there was probably a couple of dozen awards there by the brigadier. But we were stationed, there were the amplifiers, then us, and then the brigadier with his mic. And we couldn't hear what was coming through the amplifier, so we didn't know what we'd done anyway, but we were invited down to, the two of us, we were invited down to the officers' mess tent to have a jug in the evening, and we found out what we'd done. That's that. Then we got our transport back. I've said that we had trained to put up these canvas things on the side of the lorries, but ideally, if we can find, particularly in Normandy or in Holland, if we can find a house or a farm, that was ideal. With the old thick stone walls, it made our customers coming in feel a bit safer, and we used to clean them out with disinfectant. But that was the ideal. In fact, I've got some pictures here that were taken by Picture Post in Normandy, which I expect I can find a copy for you to take.
So were these farmhouses good places to have a field ambulance unit in?
Pardon?
Were these farmhouses good places to use for your purposes?
Yes, because of the stone walls, I suppose it made us feel a bit safer than having a bit of canvas or nothing round there. And indeed, if the weather was inclement, we were reasonably undercover. But there was one occasion back in Normandy in the around Mount Pisson, when we took over, I think it was at St. Lo, and we took over this farmhouse. And the first thing to do is we want water, so we had one body who was water. Ralph, go and test the water in the well, as Jerry was quite often likely to contaminate it before he left.
You mean poison it?
Yeah. Yeah. So he went and tested the water, and he went up to the well, and in amongst the growth around it, he saw a metal object, which he thought was could be a mine. So he hollered everybody out of all the buildings and find yourself a hole and get in. And he got some signal wire and put a loop round it and paid it out 50 yards and yanked it, and out came a German mastin. Because on that, the other thing that with German leaving nasties behind was that, again, if we were pulling up into a village in the evening and we could get into the cellars of the house, then we felt quite all right down in the cellar. And also we'd find some preserved eggs, and there used to be a little big litre, perhaps 2 litre, casks of Calvados, but we were told not to drink this because German had the idea of drinking it first and then fill it up with wood alcohol, which would have turned you blind. But we took our chance, and so we left this field where the presentations were done and started heading for Brussels. We ultimately went on this formal parade through Brussels with all the girls trying to kiss us and the kids asking for cigarettes for Papa, that sort of thing. And I was standing up in the front of a 1500-weight, feeling like Field Marshal Montgomery or somebody, and I just turned and a bunch of flowers hit me in the eye with stalks first, so I wound up with a lovely black eye on that job. So after Brussels, we were still doing our medical side of our duties constantly, but it came up to just before Christmas, and for the first time we were told to go and find ourselves billets in, I think it was Ghent. Needless to say, my pal Ron and myself found ourselves a good one. It happened to be the local parson, and we were allocated the front room with 3 or 4 of us to sleep, and got one in with the family. They got their Christmas tree, and we were helping them put up the crib, and they were wanting a Christmas cake, and I'm rather adept at icing, so I iced the cake for them and that sort of thing, and we were looking forward to a good Christmas. But on the morning of Christmas Eve, it was just our section, about a dozen of us, perhaps a dozen and a half, said you've got to pull out because they found that there wasn't any medical cover at X, which was a little railway halt 15 or 20 miles away. And that was to be our set up as our station. So that it wound up cooking Christmas dinner. We had plenty there, but I was cooking it on 2 primer stoves and a couple of old Vara stoves and a beer stove. But we had all the things, and we pulled some off a bit of fur and decorated it with flag papers and something to make it look like a Christmas tree. And that was our Christmas on the station, but it was quite good. And then on through Holland, we did have a bit of rest right in Hengelo. Oh, there's 2 Hengelos. There's a Hengelo O, and there we did have a few weeks rest. I remember bathing. We used to go down to the mines, and there used to go in and undress, and there were pulleys way up in the ceiling with a hook comes down, so you hang all your clothes up on this hook and hoisted it up and locked it up so nobody could go through it, because it was 10 or 20 feet up on the ceiling. But we got in some made some nice friends. I was billeted there again with a parson's family, Fee Matinee, and they looked after us quite well.
Did they get paid for it?
I would think so. Well, technically we had our own, but they used to get some rum and that sort of thing. That was quite good. We've been back there since and I found them. But, so we advanced through Holland. I suppose I'm trying to recall 65 years ago. You know. We were coming up then to Operation Market Garden, which, as I remember, was they had arranged this airborne drop at Arnhem, and it was up to, it was a calculated risk by Monty, but it was up a straight road. To get up there too as soon as we could. But there were all sorts of problems. Mainly there were Germans trying to get back across there from, I suppose, Antwerp or somewhere, which held us up because we had no flank protection at all. There was another hectic moment of my army career in by the side of this road, about 50 yards parallel, was a single railway track, and the signals had been wanting to lay cables for their telephones, and they had one of these mobile things that you see on the films, a hand-operated buggy, and they were paying it out. But unfortunately, Jerry had laid a mine on the rail, and this thing had gone over, and so we have to. So it came back, one ambulance and orderlies up here, sort of thing. So myself and another pal went up, and we could see this thing, but in German was this 50-yard thing was all mined. You know, and had to set up, well, be careful, danger of mines and that sort of thing. So anyway. We've been taught again to watch out for booby traps and snap wires and that sort of thing. But anyway, two of us, we got this stretcher and walked in very carefully. On the way in, we saw a duck that had been killed. We thought we'd have that for dinner on the way back, but that didn't happen. Anyway, we picked our way through, with lots of luck, and got this bloke on the stretcher and came back out of him.
Where was this? Where was it?
Halfway between, in Holland, before, on the way up to Arnhem. But, as I've said, it was a bit of a frightening moment going through that minefield, because, and what I've said is, a good job I was wearing brown khaki. And then, so as we approached Arnhem, and then one morning we found, we went, and there was all these planes going over, a terrific sight, drawing gliders and that sort of thing. And, we stood up on the tarboard and watched them. It was very, very impressive. But we were told that at Nijmegen, this is several weeks before, the idea there were some Rhine barges at Nijmegen, and Arnhem is on the cleft of two rivers, the Rhine, Niederrhein and Vel. And some idea they had that we were going to get on these boats and assault land on the other side, but when we got up there, they sunk all the barges. But it's a job to describe verbally the lay of the land, but if you can imagine several square miles of marshy land, which we called the island because it was surrounded on two sides by the rivers with drill at the centermost point. And we realised that we were too late because these panzer divisions had been nestled and surrounded the airborne, but it was still our job to try and get as many back as we could. And again, it was the 130 Brigade, and it was arranged that the 5th Dorsets would go try and get across the river and form a perimeter around the airborne to let them get back. Quite a wide river, quite fast flowing. So, while they were waiting for boats, canvas boats and that thing to come up, I suppose we set up in a school at Driel, which was quite fair, except it was right opposite the church, and in the church was an OP observation post for the artillery, and Germans kept on trying to knock it down, obviously. So it wasn't terrifically pleasant, but a little bit of lateral thinking that, as I've told you, that we go occasionally down to the Portsmouth Grammar School to talk on these subjects, and I said to the students, now, a bit of lateral thinking, I can't remember the exact numbers, but we took in 100 casualties, and 102 went out. How? Oh, somebody came in by the back way. No. And then ultimately, I'll tell one student on one occasion, guess, we had two pregnant women. Anyway, whilst there, they were shunning us quite a bit, and one of our officers, Tim Woods, was a stretcher bearer of us, offer, he got killed. And another two of our blokes got wounded there. But when it came to getting these paras back from the other side, the drill was that, again, my section, it's the only section in the British Army, you know, it's this one. And we were told to go down to a little village called Elst, E-L-S-T, I think, and to find somewhere to set up. So we found the biggest bungalow that we could find, opened the patio doors, threw all the furniture out on the lawn, ripped up the carpets and nailed them over the windows to act as blackouts. But as soon as we started a lorry or an ambulance, the Germans across the river could hear it, and then came the shells again. But anyway, they'd been down, and we managed to get this wasn't our job, but we had, I suppose, the REs managed to get a rope across the river, so anybody trying to swim back would come down on this rope and they could haul themselves ashore. And from the end of that rope up to a bit of a wood, we put mine tape up so that to direct them up to our bungalow. And in the bungalow, I said we set up for treating minor injuries, bearing in mind these are all going to be exhausted and wet, and the cooks were brewing up tea and that sort of thing. And we had quite a few uniforms so they could dry out and have a warm and that, but I say we couldn't transport them back to our HQ. They had a walk. But, anyway, in the event, we went down, and it was a Canadian boating party with canvas boats. We were trying to get it in, and the first couple of bouts were just riddled with machine gun fire from the other side. But ultimately, I got some across, and my then company commander, Major Mott, who was a great guy, great surgeon, he decided he was going across on his own and to help out that sergeant. Anyway, they started coming back, and we were doing our thing in the bungalow, and then we started had run out of uniforms. So I sent my blokes out to just break into all the bungalows and get any clothes that they could get. And some of the blokes were walking up, they were in fur coats and ladies' knickers and that, but had to be found outside, like. And in fact, I'm proud to say that all the airborne that came back from there came back through our little unit. They were evacuated, of course, we had our motor ambulance convoys to get them back. But having been through that, I was confident that I was at Arnhem, or we were at Arnhem. But since the war, and only about 3 or 4 years ago, we had a great argument with the authorities at Arnhem. It was myself who was saying we were there, and they said we weren't. I said, well, look, I've got two blokes buried in the cemetery up there, and we didn't bring them up for Normandy just to bury them up there, sort of thing. This is the Arnhem Veteran Association or something like that. There was another bloke, a brigadier artilleryman, who was also having a go because he wasn't there. But ultimately we got it resolved, and as they said, that this is the perimeter of the Battle of Arnhem, and if you weren't in that, you weren't there. But like the artillery, they were throwing it over the top outside the perimeter, so they weren't there. But ultimately, they relented, and suddenly we got a dozen tickets sent to the 43rd Div Association to go to the ceremony at Arnhem. What came next? Oh, yeah. Anyway, having got that sorted out, came that was when von Rundstedt broke through in the Ardennes. And we were up near Nijmegen, and the 43rd was sent down there to give a hand out. And so then von Rundstedt broke through the Ardennes, and we, the 43rd Div, were dispatched down there to give a hand. It was a terrible trip. Snow was on the ground. I was on a motorbike, and I suppose it must have been something like 200 miles or something. And anyway, we got down there, and I said, well, that's your place there to set up. I put it into a German bomb cemetery, or ammunition dump, which we didn't think was a very good place to be, but never mind. And at least there were bunkers there. So again, we set up in one of the bunkers. The lads who were cold and wet and not miserable, I suppose, but glad to get something warm. And in these bunkers, there were things which were known as tortoise stoves, it's a cast iron circular thing with a chimney going up through the roof, which you put wood and goodness knows what in to get warm. There wasn't any wood. And I'm told this, and I believe it to be right, that they were burning cordite. But apparently you can burn cordite as long as it's not confined. It's not a thing, but anyway, in the meantime, we'd set up in one of these at a dressing station. The colonel had gone back to, or company commander had gone back to brigade to get his orders. and a dispatch rider came in to authorise a rum ration, because us two sections, A and B companies, were forward troops, and we got occasionally rum rations where HQ didn't. So anyway, we had one mad Irish doctor with us, and he said, right, you should get it in a nominal roll. Got on the old turn the handle to get the telephone stand to the bunkers, and rum ration, any of you want to rum ration, you've got to come up and get it and be ticked off.